Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Andrew Pescara, vocalist for the Los Angeles-based group Gottlieb. The band recently released their politically charged album, The Far Fallen Fruit, and will launch their U.S. tour June 11th in Phoenix, Arizona. Pescara recently spoke about his introduction to punk rock, the relationship between art and activism, and whether there actually is one, and the real-life events which inspired the lyrics to songs heard on The Far Fallen Fruit. That's Andrew Pescara of Gottlieb on Into Music, coming up now. What was your kind of introduction to punk rock?
Geez, just like everybody else, I was at the record store, wrong place, wrong time, and I stumbled across, you know, I'm from Michigan originally, and Michigan, the local scene is typically like Midwest emo and shoegaze, and I went to the record store and I was looking for things that were Midwest emo and shoegaze, and like, I knew I had a lot of angst and I just didn't feel that sad though. And I saw a Sex Pistols record and I was like, I think I feel like this. I think I feel pissed off. I don't think I'm that sad. I think I'm angry. Picked up Sex Pistols, picked up Black Flag, picked up Nirvana's first record, and it was just, you know, it's ruined my life ever since.
And like, how old were you when you made that trip to the record store?
I started going to the record store by myself around 16 when I started working for the first time. I'd work at the ice cream shop and walk around the corner to Wazoo Records on State Street and pick up a new CD with my tips, tip cash every money, just go and buy a new CD. 6 CD changer, fill it up, play it through all summer.
So you were going for this kind of older music that was not emo, was a little more intellectual. Did you have like a, at that point, did you already like have political leanings or anything like that?
I mean, political leanings, like proper American political leanings, you know, around 15, probably not. But I'd always had a problem with authority. I've always had a problem kind of following the rules. And, I didn't know that was a political stance or what where that landed me politically until I was older, obviously. But I'm from a small town. I'm from a town of 7,000 people, Saline, a little tiny town. Google, if you're listening to this, Google Saline, Michigan, and you'll see our school board meeting pop up on the BBC World News for how racist that place was. So I was in the fishbowl of small town America, and suddenly I was being exposed to these ideas about who was running everything and like who we spend our lives kind of giving our labor to and who the real victims are. And that immediately made me, it compounded the authority problem. But I became politically active probably around 2015, 2014, somewhere in there, right when I graduated high school. But it didn't have a ton to do with punk rock. It was just sort of happening organically.
Because, I mean, I think sometimes there's just that sense of like, I mean, so for me, it wasn't punk rock. It was heavy metal. It was Judas Priest. And I'm growing up like in an industrial area where there's high unemployment. And I'm hearing about, you know, like, you don't know what this is like. And I'm like, oh, man, this is my stuff. And just this sense that there was injustice in the world. And then a little bit later, it's like, oh, I can do something about this.
Yeah, you know, I think just hearing something that disrupts your programming is sort of, not to sound like a red pill guy or whatever, like that, I don't, seeing through the matrix or whatever, but something that disrupts and challenges where you're from is going to have that effect. And for me, I think the first song that I can think of is like Glory Hallelujah by Frank Turner. The chorus is, there never was no God, there's no God, clap your hands together, there's no heaven, there's no hell. Let's all take care of each other. And I'm from a Christian ass town, and being able to belt that and seeing how mad people got, it was the inciting incident.
So when did you kind of turn what you had heard on records and what you'd experienced, when did that kind of come out as music?
Ooh, that's a good question. It had to come out as something, you know. It didn't start as music. It was, you know, I'm the son of white liberals from a small town, and so they were the progressives of that town. Ann Arbor is a very educated place, and so I was already pretty. I was a liberal, like a, I don't know, Biden liberal when I was young. Yeah, I guess how you'd say. And when Trump was getting into office, and the first time, and when Bernie was running his campaign, it became a sort of litmus test and a testament to how little power I had. And so it just came out as something. It whether it was music, or I just knew that I couldn't wait to vote every 4 years. I knew I couldn't go ask a police officer to fix the crimes I was seeing inherent in our system every day. I can't go ask a cop to fix homelessness. I can't go ask a cop to fix income inequality. I had to do that with my hands. And then the music came in after I wanted to do things with my hands. You know what I mean? To me, music isn't the action. Music is about the action. I have to scream about it as therapy. The action is giving someone a sandwich, yelling at a cop to their face. That's the action, you know? So the action precedes the music, and it's more important than the music, I think.
So that just becomes part of the source material, and then with the audience, if they want to grasp that, they have a
Sure.
point of entry.
Yeah, it's like you said, everything is rooted around consumption, and I don't want to, we can't bring a guitar to a knife fight, bro. You understand? Like we can't bring a guitar and do these symbolic gestures and expect things to change. You know, we have to, it's not fun work what we're doing. It's not fun. And so, yeah, the music is a privilege for me. The music, I get to speak about what I've seen and what I've done and what I've seen people better than me do every day. But that shit's hard work, man. That stuff is hard work. You know, that stuff is, it's not playing music. It's waking up early and protecting your identity and buying groceries for people. That's the action.
Yeah, I think about that quote from Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five. You know, he says, "I'm writing an anti-war novel," and somebody says, "Why don't you write an anti-glacier novel instead? You know, like it'll be just as effective."
It's the wrong tool for the job, man. Art is just here to document it. It can't, art can't change the world. I'm sorry, it can't.
And yet, you're making music though, so.
Love it. I love it. I cannot do it. I can't not do it, man. Why does a dog chase a tennis ball? It loves to, you know? I have to do music. I have to. It's how I speak, it's how I think. And there's something in me that made me want to do it, you know, but to delude myself into thinking it's going to change the world is a disservice to not only myself, but to the audience. I have to lie to them and say I'm a good guy because I'm doing music. I know a lot of bad people who do music. I know a lot, and I know a lot of people who don't do a damn thing for the world, who do music and pat themselves on the back and say that they're changing things. I disagree. So I do music because I love it. You know, I do music because I'm privileged to be able to do it. Someone was able to pay a ticket to me, and that's a privilege, man. Jeez, why not? What else is there for me? You know, what other joy? I walked on somebody's head twice this year, and they paid me to do it. You know, like, you don't want to do that?
Well, that brings up two things to me. One is which, you know, this notion of stay in your lane, that all of us can only be one thing. We can be a teacher, or we can be an activist, or we can be a plumber, or we can be an activist. And whatever we do, it's like there almost has to be some suffering in it. Like we can't really enjoy teaching. We gotta, you know. It's got to be, there's got to be some sort of pain attached. And I disagree with both of those notions. Like, if you're playing music and you feel good about that, that should be enough. Like, everything else should fall away. And because you, but at the same time, because you feel like you found your place, you should feel a little guilty about that because lots of other people don't.
I think there's two things you're talking about. I think picking a lane, the whole picking a lane thing, I think that that is has more to, I don't think that exists outside of this country, really, outside of this hyper-capitalist country. I don't think the whole pick your, like, I go to Italy or whatever. My family is, I have family in Italy. And, you know, my cousin, I say, what do you do? And they're like, oh, I cook, I go to the beach, and I work at a vintage shop. You come to the U.S., it's like, what do you do? And you're like, well, I'm an executive manager, blah, blah, blah. I'm a truck driver, I'm this, I'm that. It's like, here you have to fit into whatever gear is going to keep the system running, you know? And if I can't fit into a gear, I take that as a sign I'm doing something right because I'm a human being. I don't know if that, hits on what you're talking about. I don't want to be reduced. I refuse. It makes it very hard to employ me because people look at my resume and they're like, what the hell? You were a karate teacher and a writer and an assistant and a substitute teacher and a what else? I don't know, whatever weird stuff I've done. That's very non-linear. And I'm like, what? You want life to be a straight line? What is wrong with you? I've had a life. I live life. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not an AI, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then the irony that you want, everybody wants you to be trained at something, which will ultimately you'll be replaced anyway. So it's like, yeah, do like 15 different things.
Yeah. Enjoy what you're doing, man. Like, we don't need to be doing this stuff. Like, we mathematically don't need to be doing as much as we're doing. We can get into the album now. My generation, Gen Y and Gen Z, millennials and Gen Z, on paper, are the most educated and economically productive generations that have existed in the history of the world. They are. That's not an opinion. That's true. And like, people are benefiting from that. People are benefiting and making a lot of money from that. The stuff that we're producing is not ending up in our pockets. It's not, we're not getting homes, you know? We're not increasing our wealth. We only own like 20% or maybe less of the economy. Our slice of the pie is so small. So what we're producing isn't about a livelihood. It's putting money in someone's pocket. We don't need to be doing this. Someone's benefiting, you know? And that's what the record's about, is this far fallen fruit. That's the metaphor, the far fallen fruit, you know, where we've fallen so far from this idea of like, rise and grind and earn your keep. It's like, rise and grind and earn someone else's keep. Rise and grind or you're going to die. You know, that's, and if you're the smartest generation, if you're the most educated, productive generation, and you're being exploited, bro, they're sitting on a gold mine. That's us. I mean, we're in a different generation, so I'm curious what you think of that, I guess, you know?
No, I mean, I saw, you know, my dad was a World War II vet. I saw that was what would happen to people of his generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That
yeah.
They were sent to war. They're like, oh, we'll give you the GI Bill. But it was like, yeah, man, you put your life on your line. You're damaged for the rest of time.
Well, what'd they get out of you, you know?
Yeah. Thanks. We'll keep on moving.
Right. Right. And that's not to say that we're the only generation that's unexploited. Obviously, that's not what I'm trying to say at all. Every generation has its working class and its exploiting class. You know, I just was writing from the generation of what I'm going through and trying to relate this very specific version of exploitation that we're going through, this weird technocratic oligarchy. You know, that's what we're trying to talk about, you know. But that's not to say that other generations didn't get exploited or have a working class, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the only difference is that my dad's generation could afford a house. So you could go through PTSD in private, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you pay rent on it.
Yeah.
Pay rent on it.
With your 8 roommates.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I have, bro. The band lives together in a house. I'm in that house right now, you know?
I'm enjoying talking to you about this because it's helping me see, you know, for a long time, I thought, as I get older, I'm going to be less angry about these things.
And I'm not.
No. Me either. Yeah, me either. Yeah, my parents and everybody's parents, I guess, say, oh, you'll grow out of this extreme stuff when you're older. No, man. We're country you're in right now benefits extremophiles, you know? Like you have to be comfortable with some element of the extreme to survive right now. I never thought I'd live a life where it doesn't happen often, but it does happen. I never thought I'd live a life where there was an AR-15 pointed at me. I never thought I would. I never thought I'd live a life where I was being tear gassed. I never thought I'd live a life where my friends were being thrown into vans for the color of their skin. These are not things I'm making up. These are things that happened to me in the last 6 years, happened to my the last 6 months, things that happened to my friends in the last 6 months because of what this system has delivered us. So the idea that I'm going to get less extreme, I'm in an extreme place, you know? I'm in a thermal vent at the bottom of the ocean. It's boiling down here. I got to be extreme, you know? There's a track called White Vans on the record. And White Vans is a story about when we ran, we, when my neighborhood ran the police out of our neighborhood one day. It was LA 2025, rough place to be. June, we got invaded by ICE. I mean, it was like they were locking down streets, big SWAT cars and Humvees and stuff everywhere, locking down whole streets. And the whole city learned how to oppose, and the whole city kind of, I don't want to say it unified, but neighborhoods learned how to organize, and they had to change their tactics because of our organization. They couldn't go lock down streets and make a big scene because they would get chased off. Now they have to go in with a van and five people in and out quickly because they're the enemy. It's not their ground anymore. It's our ground. So this is the situation we find ourselves in when July comes around. And we're in my neighborhood and the band's neighborhood, and there's a porch theft. It's like someone takes a package off a porch. And one of the neighbors calls the police because we've experienced all these Amazon thefts around here. And police show up, and the guy who has the Amazon package is running down the hill. And we're like, he's over there, go get him, he's over there. Instead of doing that, the police use this opportunity to start busing up one of our neighbors, people of color, who are parked on a red curb where you're not supposed to be, pull out of the car, handcuff them, gunpoint, nothing to do with this porch theft at all. And because the city is so primed to stop ICE, they see the police doing this. And like, it started with like maybe 10 people, but then turned to 20, 30, 40 people came out of their homes and started surrounding these police officers. So more cop cars show up, eight explorers, 16 police officers, and a helicopter for a porch theft. And it's Los Angeles. You know, there's rival affiliations coming together to chase these people off. There's people from the gentrified building up the street. There's grannies who've been in the neighborhood forever. There's like different backgrounds, classes, colors, all holding these people accountable, holding these cops accountable. And we de-arrested those guys. We de-arrested those dudes who were in the car, made sure they got away without their cuffs. We all recorded all the police trying to go on without a warrant and this and that. And the whole neighborhood screamed at them and was yelling at them as they were in their cars driving away. F you, don't come back to mid-city. And if you come back with ICE, it's going to be worse. See what happens. And now it's ours. Now we're the police. And that's what White Vans tells the story of. White, that song, White Vans, talks about, you know, we are the police and we speak like it. That's how you talk to us. Now that's how we're talking to you. You can't stop us. You're not the police anymore. We're the police.
You've been listening to a conversation with Andrew Pescara of Gottlieb. The band's new album, The Far Fallen Fruit, is out now. You can learn more about it via the band's official Bandcamp page, gottlieblosangeles.bandcamp.com. Visit the group's official website, gottlieb-la.com, to see more about them, including current U.S. tour dates. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson.